Are entrepreneurs stubborn?
Obsessed is a better description.
There's someone who's coming to see you, counting on you hiring them. And it's up to you to distinguish who's who.
I don't believe the customer is always right. I don't.
Sometimes if you tell the employees and host the real story of as is, it never works out.
There are customers, if you bring them heaven on earth, and unlimited supply of whatever they need, they'll still have a problem.
In the beginning, I had 17 locations in the UAE. Now I have only one, because that's the only one that actually makes money.
When you start revolving your whole business around the satisfaction of others, there is no way you won't succeed.
This is a hard journey, right? This is not someone who's coming in and knows everything is set and I'm just going to sit here 9 to 6 and do things.
I don't think it's for everybody. It's not. It's just a sexy word for everybody. I'm an entrepreneur. It's like, no, you're not. You're self-employed.
If anyone wants to pursue entrepreneurship, they need to master self-love. That's when you know between you and yourself, you're doing the right thing.
Welcome to the first episode of the No BSness podcast. For me, any successful business is built on one single principle, which is saying no to the BS which exists around you. No BS to the noise around you. No BS to the popularity contest around you. No BS to the seemingly perfect stories which are told to you day in and day out of entrepreneurship. I'm going to talk about all those imperfect, unvarnished truths of building a business as an entrepreneur. And it is not for everyone. That's what we're going to talk to about with fellow entrepreneurs. We're going to share their stories completely raw, uncut, about what it takes to build a successful enterprise. And today we have two successful entrepreneurs who have exactly done that. Today we have Ahmed, who's the founder of Aquafun. He's popularly known as the Aquaman of Dubai. He has successfully built the world's largest floating water park right here in Dubai. And he's also the proud recipient of numerous titles, including the Guinness Book of World Record and Entrepreneur of the Year, and the list goes on. And joining Ahmed, we also have Umar, who is the founder of Urent. Urent is a marketplace for car rentals in Dubai and has successfully disrupted the space. It does a complete 360 by letting people rent cars from car owners who have become business hosts in the platform rather than from faceless agencies and organizations. Welcome to my space, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
One thing which characterizes both of you in the same light is you have built something which in its sense doesn't exist before you guys decided to do something, and you've made it to be really successful and scaled it up. What's the pros and cons on pursuing business ideas which didn't exist before versus some which may be profitable but existed before?
So many cons, of course. People, because again, imagine this, you wear a lens and this lens sees that goal and that vision and you're the only person who sees it. So trying to convince people, hey, this will work. This is a good idea. This is a powerful idea. This is a scalable idea. This is an awesome idea. Convincing people, you know, sometimes you have new ideas that the laws have not even yet caught up to it.
Correct.
So you have to create a new law or a system for that to be approved. So that's always a challenge. Like when I started doing this almost 13 years ago, what do you mean you want to rent the water?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? And that was a big problem, trying to get them to understand and get the permissions from that. And then saying, everybody saying no. Okay, tell me why no. Yeah. Give me officially why is a no.
Absolutely.
So you can counter that for you.
Yeah.
And step by step, you know, it's not, but that's the thing about it. Like, you know, how do you see solutions?
Are entrepreneurs stubborn? And what difference is that quality than someone who's just stubborn in real life, right?
Obsessed is a better description.
Right.
Yeah. Obsessed and possessed with making it happen. We understand what lonely is and we're happy with that space.
Correct.
It's a very lonely space. It's not. It's a very testing space. It's a very pressure all day, every day. Right. You know that, yeah.
I mean, it's more or less the uncertainty. It's someone who's stubborn outside of being an entrepreneur has some, you know, maybe childhood trauma or self-related issues that he needs to deal with that root way back from his childhood. But when it comes to entrepreneurs and being stubborn, they're stubborn for a reason, because we've made it this far being told by many people and many sources, you're not going to make it.
Correct.
So we're stubborn from that angle because we're trying to prove to ourselves, not to people.
Correct.
That we can continuously break these barriers without getting the kind of approval or reassurance constantly from people. Because I found out maybe 2-3 years into when I first founded my company that it's more of a spiritual journey than a business journey because becoming an entrepreneur is shedding. It's a constant cycle of shedding and rebirth, death and rebirth. And what I mean by death and rebirth is death and rebirth to one's inner self. So when I reach a plateau while I'm moving in my entrepreneurial journey, I know that there's something I have to change in my environment, the people that I'm around, in myself, that only then will I ascend to the next cycle.
Right.
So once you kind of understand that, that's when you will understand that it's a game. Life's a game.
Yeah.
And it's just like completing quests, how you people, you know, play these online games. Some people, and it's the best way to put it out there, some people choose to finish the career to 100%. Some people give up on the career mode at 40% and opt out for free play.
Right.
So that's what I see majority of people around us. We are the ones that stuck to the career mode, regardless of how hard it was.
What is that point when you say, perhaps I need to cut my losses here? Is that even something which exists with an entrepreneur?
I don't think so. Do you?
No.
I don't think so. Because here's the thing. What I learned from being an entrepreneur is there's always another side. So there's always, no matter how, and that's where faith comes into play.
Right.
See, that key word here is faith. That's where it comes into play, because you will reach a point where everything around you, everything in front of you, will tell you, this is it.
Yeah.
There's nothing beyond this point. You're this close to this pivotal moment. And the problem is some people fold. But I haven't ever seen someone who came up with a ridiculous idea. I mean, take Ahmed as an example. I mean, building an inflatable water park or something and renting land in sea. It's a sea, not even a plot of land. But what he's achieved is pretty much a prime example of that. I mean, it's something where everyone thought it was stupid. Everyone thought it was impossible. He, at some point, I'm sure, just like myself, reached a point where we started doubting ourselves.
Yeah.
But once you overcome that and you keep pushing, that's when miracles start happening.
Right.
And I keyword miracles.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you can relate, you know, in terms of,
yeah,
not miracles, but things unfold. And between you and yourself, you're like, I knew it.
Yeah.
I just had to keep pushing. You know what I mean? And maybe, funny thing is, I've seen other people who are pursuing entrepreneurship in a certain project. They reached a brick wall, a moment where, you know, just like we just said, it's we don't know where to go from here. I want to just give up. Not necessarily does it have to be in what he's working on, but he stumbles upon someone or something that pivots the entire situation into something completely unexpected. And now he's on a whole different trajectory.
Yeah.
So if it's not what you're working on, life would throw you somewhere else where you're going to elevate even higher.
Right.
That's what I believe. Right.
Speaking of aqua fun.
Yeah.
Dubai is perhaps the center of some of the best entertainment options, some of the best experiential options. How in the right mind would you think of an idea which would probably compete with all of that and take it to the next level? I'd love to hear that from you, Ahmed.
So many ways. The format we see now is me going through keyword pivoting moments, a lot of them, being bankrupt in business, being sued multiple times because of mistakes you did do early in the business. But I think the main one came because of, okay, I skydive. I want to see the government did the palm, did all these big things. I want to be creating something I could see from the sky. So that came up the idea. That's why the first thing, the word Dubai. And then when we got the Guinness record for the largest water park in the world, that was, again, same thing. How do you make the biggest statement in the world? Was the Expo time, Expo 2020. So I wrote, I love Expo 2020 Dubai. Massive. Went amazing, but then that's the whole thing. Like when people will always root for you until you succeed. So after we did that, till today, I still get fights and war from like different entities and so on and so on.
Absolutely.
Trying to sabotage or like slow us down or make us spend more money and so on and so on. Because again, we don't understand the commercial and the emotional return of this.
Correct.
I think that the genius thing I did is I just never quit. Because again, it's always an option, but it's never a choice.
True.
And that's the powerful thing. Because again, everybody telling you quit. But then, like I said, I've did all this long. You know? And it's very important to have a very high level of self-worth and self-awareness. To understand where are you being competitively pointless, or you're actually doing things forward.
Yeah.
Because you can do it for the ego, I'm going to do this, but then did that for your ego. Okay, cool. But you lost all this money.
Yeah.
So I learned, okay, don't do things just for the ego or for the prestige or just I'm here. No, no. I'm a businessman. I do what's the ROI of this movement, that movement. And just take it from there.
How do you actually see people that work for you in this journey? Because I see that you've scaled fairly large in terms of having 870 people who are currently as part of this journey with you. Among this sort of scale, how do you make the choice between the right and the wrong person for this journey?
I hire fast and I even fire faster. And I promote you fastest. Right. So I hire you, okay, let's try you up, see how you do. If you're not doing very bad, again, it's not personal, it's business. I'll fire you. And I still want you to eat, but not on my table. That's fine with me. Again, I don't want to be, I'll do charity somewhere else. I won't give it to you. That's all, because again, when you have that one bad apple, it ruins the whole thing. It's an energy thing for me. If there's no synergy between all the staff and the people and so on, so you have the same vision, no one will ever have the same vision I have. Obviously, because I'm the owner. But at least if they have somewhat the right things and you have the right incentives to them, because incentivizing people is the most important thing. Two things. Be kind and give them money. If you treat them nicely, respectfully, and you make sure they incentivize money in every job you do, they get paid for it, then yeah.
In your opinion, what's the right kind of person in this startup journey? Because this is a hard journey, right? This is not someone who's coming in and knows everything is set and I'm just going to sit here 9 to 6 and do things. Mm. It's not that. They need to be as much bought into your journey as theirs. So I'd like to hear from both of you on that. But I don't want to get the conventional things like, hey, hardworking, loyal. Great. I mean, all of that. But what's it that makes them go beyond to actually be a part of a startup journey? Who are the right startup employees? Who are the people who are the right ones to start the dance with you?
I was once scrolling on Instagram and I saw a reel on Elon Musk being asked the same question. And his answer nailed it, because I finally figured out there's someone out there who's like me, or I'm like someone in his example. He said, I hire based on intuition. And by that, he meant that it's not about the paperwork you're providing. I've never hired on CV, ever.
Me too, yeah.
It's how I feel and how the person presents themselves and how hungry they come across. Because there are people who walk in for an interview with an agenda. They're probably going to another interview right after your office. And there's someone who's coming to see you, counting on you hiring them. And it's up to you to distinguish who's who. And in my case, almost, I want to say 100% of the time, but 70% of the time, I would hire based on how I felt after meeting the person. Was I comfortable? Was I not comfortable? Did I have faith in that person? Did I not? But almost... most of the employees that remained with me were hired based on intuition. Now, needless to say, the culture that you have in your workplace is completely up to you from that point onwards. What I mean by is I treat my employees like family. Like they're actually, I don't just ask them to report back to me, but I check up on them. I speak to them. I build a friendship with them to the point where you start seeing their behavior change with you. So if I truly think you give an opportunity to someone, that's one thing. But how that person performs is 100% based on how you treat them, how you invest in them, and what they see you as in their life.
You get what you give.
Exactly. That's how it is for me.
Same thing in energy, man. I'm very aligned, very intuitive. You walk in, I know exactly what you are. First second. But yeah, again, same thing. I have 700 to 800 something staff now. I haven't seen a single CV. Like the top, my top 7 directors, 6 of them are females.
Nice.
Emotional intelligence, man, is the best thing. Again, culture is very important, because if you have somebody who's make life harder for everybody else, it's a problem. And finding the right incentives, like incentivizing people, like for example, it's a simple thing that I do with my staff. If you open now Google Reviews, open the JBR location, we have more than 4,000 reviews and we are 4.9 stars. The reason why behind that, I just hacked it. It's a very simple thing. Okay. Instead of my staff, they deal with the customers every single day. Okay. Right. Instead of you trying to get a commission or a tip from each customer, don't do that. Do a great job with the customer. And before they leave, hey, give the business a review and mention my name. end of the month, I see how many reviews under your name. Each review, I pay you an amount of money for it. Mm-hmm. That amount of money compounds, becomes even bigger than your salary. So now the customer's got an amazing service. The company gets an amazing review, and the staff get incentivized and do the job right. So all three are winning.
Got it.
And that's a very hard thing to do. How to figure out a win-win for everybody. But because I treat it as we're all human. Companies and businesses are nothing but other humans.
Got it.
So how do you become likable and work with them in that way? Simple as that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And over a period of time, I think people start looking and valuing that. They have conversations with each other about, hey, I got this many reviews. You got these reviews.
It becomes competitive in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It becomes competitive. We know this. I know these three guys are very good with kids.
Yeah,
I know these two guys are very good with families. I know these guys are very good with girls or with guys.
Yeah.
So I know. Now we know who's got
the absolutely. Yeah. In terms of the business, when it comes to managing entertainment experiences, I personally believe that it's a very complex business.
Extremely. Yeah.
Extremely complex. Because one, as you rightly said, there's this mix of hospitality, people delighting other people. Then there is this aspect of it being physical, but also there is an intangible service, right?
Yeah.
For someone who's looking at this right now and sort of aspiring to build an entertainment experience, what are the kind of revenue sources on a larger level, on a broader level that Aquafun sort of gets in? And what are the costs which are the real contribution to the expenses for the business?
Mm.
If you can give us a breakdown of it, just for everyone to understand that.
Different layers, to be honest. One layer. I mean, of course, you have the rent and the salaries. That's a big chunk, correct, of course. There's always the consumable stuff, like, you know, the drinks, the water, the socks, things people are using once and they throw away. These are very good things because, like, these are very volume driven.
Correct.
So it's very much scalable. So you have margins on top of that. So you can, let's say, you get something for 1 dirham, say, 5 dirhams. So you create the need and you supply the want for it.
Right.
So you do this together. That's a very, very important thing.
I think one thing which I really found was a brilliant stroke from you was, of course, you want to sort of get revenue from people who experience it, but you've also built a revenue out of branding.
Yes.
Like an outdoor branding exercise, which a lot of people don't realize perhaps is the future of entertainment experiences in that sense, right? Because I have an example of the Eye in Las Vegas right now, where they've actually built a huge eye pupil looking building.
Yes.
And it changes its display every sort of regular times when there's a movie launch or when there's something new, some new celebrity coming on town. So I think that's something which is very unique to how you've looked at business. Was that your idea?
It was basically, it's like Burj Khalifa is doing this. I can do the same thing. Like I said, it's impossible to do this. I said, okay, hold my drink, watch me. And then we start doing it. And then it's like, okay, my house is actually above the place, so I can see the spacing. It's okay, move this, move this, move this, move this, and it works. And then to the factory, it's like, how do you do this? It's like, use my brain.
Yeah.
You know, don't tell me it's not possible. Tell me how we're going to make it happen. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it could be enough. You know, and that was the perfect thing, because we have one of the best beaches in the world. You know, the backdrop is in Dubai, the whole JBR, we're in the beach. It's very powerful. So that was the exercise. How do we write the branding on that? And now we released, I think, in a couple of weeks. I think by the time it's going to be out, proposals, you can do, like, you know, Ahmed Laf Sara, will you marry me, happy birthday.
Absolutely.
You know, and all these different things you can do with it. So it's very powerful.
So you're selling different experiences based on branding.
Exactly.
And how quickly can this be changed?
2 days.
2 days.
Yeah. Lovely. Which is like, how? But that's the thing, like, you... That's the
first question I got.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but that's the whole thing. Like, even though I have almost 150 anchors, each one is 400 kilos.
Yeah.
It's a lot of anchors there. So just move things around. How do you... Okay, guys, here's what I want to do. Go do it. And then they go... Now they know. Like, I don't even micromanage anybody. They're going to do it. Sarah is ready. Come see it.
And it's a first of its kind.
Always.
Right.
Always first of the kind.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
But that's the thing with... With the customer experience and so on. Because again, 4.9 is a very hard number to get.
Yes.
Extremely hard.
Yes.
But also I realized one thing, okay, systems in place, right people in place, and then I don't believe the customer is always right.
Mm.
I don't.
Right.
Because some customers are crazy.
Yes.
That's true. That's
yes.
true.
And I have this thing, like, for me, like, you know, I'm not going to start with the customer against my staff. I never do.
Mm.
Like, listen, no. Like, there were situations that I had before in some of the locations. A customer would come and be screaming at my staff. And it's like, you conned us, you liars, you this. Like, what happened? It's like, but I have a big signboard with everything in it. Everything is there.
Yeah.
You know, I have a waiver, I signed everything. You didn't read, it's your problem. It's great. There.
Absolutely.
And we do everything possible from our side, like, to make sure you're done properly. This guy comes in and complains, I don't want to walk on the sand. You're in the beach. No, you conned me and so on and so on. It's like, I don't want the sand. I don't want to swim there. It's a beach. You need to swim. Yeah. No. So you start complaining about things that, like, what are you talking about, bro? It's like giving money back. It's like, no refund.
Correct.
I'm going to complain. And start screaming at the staff. Very, very rude. That's like, say, what's going on? I want to complain. It's like, two, okay. Complain to me. Who are you? I'm the owner. Huh? This. Look, 1 second. Did they start to do this? They told you 1, 2, 3, 4? Yes, they told me. Did you see the signboard? I saw it. Okay, so you have eyes. It's working for you? 1, 2, 3. You can see it? Yeah. So nobody conned you. You have problems with it.
Absolutely.
It's like, what? I'm the customer. It's like, yeah, I'm the owner. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I can vouch for that.
And then I was like, my back? Sure, no problem.
Yeah.
Please apologize to the staff. What? Apologize to the staff.
Correct.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I asked the staff, are you okay with the apology? Yes, sir. Okay, here's the money back. How long he was there? He was there for half an hour. Okay, deduct this much money from it.
Yeah.
Give the money back. I will go talk to anybody.
Yeah.
But again, you're not going to come in and insult my family, my assets. Because you feel some kind of way.
And it also sort of causes this irreparable damage to the culture.
Yeah, because again, when they know I stand next to them, they're going to give extra to the company and the business because, hey, our back has been taken care of. You know?
100%.
That's very important for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about you, Umar? I mean, have you undergone something similar?
Oh.
Of course you did.
Oh.
Tell us some stories.
I'll tell you stories on stories.
Horror stories. Only horror stories.
Look, I came to the conclusion that customers, there's three types of customers. There are the customers who really just need a service. And even if you meet the service at an MVP stage, a minimum,
yeah,
they're satisfied. There are the customers who are honestly great customers. They don't complain. They come and they are, you know, constantly returning to rent or use your services. And then there are customers, if you bring them heaven on earth, and unlimited supply of whatever they need, they'll still have a problem.
Right.
I'm completely with them on this because in my case, it's a bunch of hosts, which we call business owners or anyone listing on Urent, and customers.
Correct.
Now, for the most part, we usually stand with the hosts. But at the same time, you know, there's a saying that goes that customers are always right. I'll tell you a quick funny story of one customer by the age of 23 or 22.
Yeah, I'm already thinking what's going to happen next.
I'm not going to mention names or nationalities here. Yeah. Just a customer that came about, called me, was Ramadan. He rented a car on our platform. Host accepted the booking, later finding out that he was under the age of 25.
Right.
Which goes against his insurance policy, meaning this driver cannot drive the car with the insurance provider. Right. And then he gave me a call. I just spent all my money. It was around 3,700 dirhams for like 3 weeks, Nissan Patrol. He's like, I just spent all my money. First of all, he called one of my admins and made her cry because of how rude he was. She then called me and I could tell from her voice that something was wrong. I was like, what's going on? She's like, this happened. I don't know what to do. I was like, don't worry about it. Give me hand. So many scenarios come where I take over and I have to take over to kind
absolutely
of like. So I took over, I called the guy, and immediately, as soon as he found out, you can relate that you're the owner, his tone changes. Mm. Very respectful. Very. I'm like, first and foremost, why are you yelling at my employees? You know, they're human just like you. And nothing, if you think you're going to get anything from us yelling and being angry, trust me, bro, you're lucky if you get a refund.
True.
Yeah.
So I had to show him that who he's dealing with, we're not going to abide by his, terms and conditions.
Right.
And again, terms and conditions, this is what saves our bumps in every business, because as soon as they accept, it's there. There's no complaints, you know. He calls me, he's like, my mom's on a wheelchair and my dad's very old. First of all, I don't even think about how that made sense given he was 22. And he's like, they're flying in and my mom has cancer. So I was like, wow. It's a serious situation.
Yeah.
They're coming to visit me for a week and I need the car and I spent all my money. I was like, don't worry about it. Called one of my good friends who was a host at your rent. I told him, listen, this is a situation. Please make an exception and give him a car. So it was from a different host. This host was, he was like, I'm not giving any car to anyone below 25. I was like, fine. So I still had the money. So all the customers pay us. We pay out the hosts every week. So I called, I made a few phone calls, found one guy who was a gentleman, a good friend of mine, long-term friend of mine, and he decided to give him the same car for the same price. Delivered. All is good. He, thank you so much. Everything was, you know, great. And then I was like, keep in touch with me. Don't talk to anyone of my admins. Anything that happens, extensions and extensions, cancellations, you speak to
so
me.
So you got him a different car.
I got him a different car from different host. And then that same money he paid, I paid out to that host.
Got it.
4 days pass. And I wake up for Fajr prayers. And it was Ramadan, like I said. And I see my phone is like 18 missed calls. And it was from that same host.
In the morning.
4 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Yeah, 18 missed calls. I'm like, what on earth happened? Give him a call. He was like, I'm really sorry to have called you this time, but this customer of yours was stopped at Oman border along with 5 other cars trying to steal. All 5 cars together was like a whole kind of mafia.
Hmm.
And I was like, just woke up and I'm like, is this a dream or is this real life? I don't know how to act. And honestly speaking, it was how I would look to the host and not about the customer. Because it was like, you know, what happened, happened.
Mm.
Turns out it was a whole scheme that they planned. And funny enough, I was talking to him every day and he was, you know,
vacated.
Needless to say, the host that gave him the car is very well connected with Oman police. And he immediately tracked it from the radar that it lost signal. And before reaching the border, he called one of his friends who was a different officer to go to the border and wait for the car with the plate number XYZ.
Right.
So God knows what would have happened if that
did not happen.
Yeah. So came, obviously what ended up happening was they threw him in jail for 3 weeks. And but what the host lost, now in the end of the day, the host understood that things happen, and I told him, listen, I'm ready to whatever compensation you need, because it was one of these detrimental moments in my business. You know, it was the first theft attempt. Needless to say, 9 more happened after. So what ended up, now where the loss was is that 60 days confiscated by Dubai police for forensics. They found things in the car that needed further investigation. But what really annoyed me is that guy coming out of jail had the decency to write a whole essay on Google review saying of how we mistreated him. And then we just replied to the same review indicating that he was in jail for 3 weeks. And we just heard that you were basically laying it on the floor for the public to see.
You know,
when it comes to reviews, you have to be calm and contained as a business owner. You cannot be aggressive. You cannot be angry. Yeah. As hard as that is not to do. It's impossible. But you have to, because in the end of the day, that's how you will maintain respect from all parties.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So absolutely.
That's one of the few stories 100%. That happened with us. But yeah.
What I really found interesting, I think both the sides, is I think when we have our heads to the wall, and the only people we can turn to are people from unexpected quarters, like hosts for you.
Correct.
Right? For employees. Sometimes if you tell the employees and hosts the real story of as is, rather than trying to sugarcoat or keeping information out from them, it never works out. 100%. It actually works out best when you tell them, hey, this is the situation, let's deal with it together.
Yeah. But it's detrimental when employees make mistakes and they are scared to tell you. So that's what I really invested in, is telling them, guys,
openness.
If you crashed your car yesterday, I want to know about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that obviously plays a role in their emotional state, how they perform.
Yeah.
And I can't be sitting there questioning why this guy is being the way he is. See, I cannot tolerate negative energy.
Right.
I'm one of these people where if I am treated in a negative way, I know how to kind of like realign my inner emotions to where I'm positive and I push it on the side. But I can sense when an employee walks in, if something's going on.
You know,
I can just pick it up. So
it's a sixth sense.
Yes, it's a sixth sense that you obviously build with time. And entrepreneurship opens that eye.
Correct.
I think you would agree with it, where it's a sixth sense.
Correct.
For the most part, I mean, it's getting the employees to the position where they feel very comfortable sharing everything with you.
In this space that you are, Umar, I mean, it's a space which is fairly populated, right? There's conventional transport services, right? And then there are these new age Kareems and Ubers of the world. Why would you think of bringing another business model to this already populated space?
Beautiful.
Tell us, Give us your whys.
It was when I lived in Toronto for 7 years. So I have an industrial engineering background. I studied at the University of Toronto. I did my master's in entrepreneurship and leadership. And during my time there, I picked up on an app called Turo. Right. And Turo was a private car rent where you would list your own car.
Yeah.
And I was renting Porsche 911s, older models, 2012, 13, 11, for $200 a day. And I was
that's what college does to us.
Yeah, this is like, I was like, I'm driving a Porsche for $200 a day, you know, right. Where if you rent out a Charger or a Dodge from Avis or Thrifty, you're paying that with insurance even more probably per day. So I just loved the idea of getting to know the individual who then I built a relationship with, who then gave me even discounted rates, and so on and so forth. So I loved the idea of the whole peer-to-peer interaction. And when I was there, it immediately I thought about replicating the idea here. Same hurdle. It wasn't regulated. Activity did not exist. The only marketplace activity available was buy and sell,
right,
which is like Dubizzle.
Yeah.
So I went up to them. I was like, you know, Dubizzle, I want to recreate Dubizzle, but focused on mobility, but for rentals. Took a year and 7 months of being in the RTA every week for them to kind of be open to license me.
Got it.
So why I decided is because I saw a gap in the market. The gap being, if you come to Dubai and you rent a car, it's from an aggregator. You don't know where the car is coming from. You're right. Renting from Easy Hire, Karasti, all these very good. Hats off to them, honestly. I mean, they're doing a very good job with what they're doing. But I wanted to add control. And what I mean by control is you as a business owner, who has a car rental, yacht rental, and again, the pivot of having 8 categories. So we do cars, yachts, chauffeur, limousine, helicopters, yachts, jet skis, ATVs. We're adding scooters and bicycles.
Yeah.
So A, creating employment for people like yourself who would want to invest in a boat, a bicycle, a car, and monetize it.
Yeah.
Next is I built a platform that is digitalizing the traditional space. Meaning if you have a business, you have a location, you have 10 employees, you can fire half your employees, close your office, work remotely using our dashboard. So we have a fleet management system. You have your own username and password. You log in. You manage your fleet.
You're converting conventional brick and mortar business.
Exactly.
You basically could be, as you rightly said, an Airbnb for
mobility,
or you could even be a Shopify, if that makes sense.
Correct, right? Correct. But for the most part, the difference here is you as a business are competing with 140 others on the platform.
Right.
You all have rating systems. Mm-hmm. You all have reviews on your profiles. All your fleets are listed. I can negotiate the price, tell you I want to rent a Lambo.
Yeah.
Tell you, listen, 2,500. And you have it listed for 2,700. You don't have to call us. No, you go to your garage, update price, edit, put 2,500, approve. Real time, he can book it for 25.
The platform takes a percentage of these commissions.
15%.
15% of the commissions.
And then we're obviously going to scale it. We just added feature your vehicle, feature your profile.
Which is more on the advertising side.
Correct.
That's the business.
Everything that marketplaces do to scale the revenue streams. But I think the home run for us will be a subscription model.
Right.
So just like how Dubizzle makes you pay to list a car for sale now, 200 dirhams. That's insane. But we have a plan to implement a package, let's say bronze, silver, platinum, where you're allowed to list an X amount of cars and then unlimited on the, and you pay a monthly subscription.
Got it.
But yeah, we've proved the concept, but now it's more or less scaling. We're just trying to expand
it further. From an entertainment experiences point of view, the experience that you have currently is purely physical in nature, right? People have to be there, spend time there. And is that by intent, or do you see in the future that the digital and the physical experiences will merge for entertainment?
For this business, it's physical.
Right.
For this type, because it's about them, because we are in the business of creating happy memories. So that means, okay, how you create happy, that means activities.
Right.
So it's like, how do you have fun under the sun? You know, how do you do activities, you and your sisters, your family, your daughter, your son, with your friends, your colleagues? So that's the idea. And again, we do different formulas, one on the sand, on land, and one on the water.
Right.
So both are different experiences.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the idea, like finding the right locations and put them there.
What do you see this future of this business in itself? Because right now, there's, let's say, one location for this. Do you see this expanding further to multiple locations?
We have 34 locations now.
Right.
Now it's like, how do you make bigger locations?
Got it.
Yeah. So now the next destination is KSA, Saudi Arabia. That's where the money is now. We want to focus more on that right now.
Got it.
Yeah, that and Egypt. Egypt maybe on off. We're still debating that, but Saudi Arabia is where it is.
Is it possible to take an existing space and transport it to another part? And
that's
is it an events business or a experience business?
We build up the whole thing. It's like a circus.
Right.
We can move it from place to place easily.
Right.
You know, I can pack up the whole thing, some containers, and go somewhere else tomorrow.
Right.
It's not a big deal. But that's the whole thing. Like it's finding the right locations. Because you do with these things, you do not want to be a destination. You want to be convenient. So be in a place that there's already traffic.
Got it.
You know, because I can put this one now in Jabal Ali, amazing beach, but no one's going to be there.
No one's going to be there.
So no, put it in a place that there's actually business.
Don't look at this as a destination business.
No.
Look at this as a business which already has destinations there.
Yes. So there's people there. You're providing them this extra service because okay, the beach is full of people.
Yeah.
That means all dollar signs sitting down doing nothing.
Got
so it. Give them something to do. That's my move from their pocket to my pocket.
Yeah.
And so that's the whole idea behind it.
I did read somewhere, Ahmed, that you mentioned when you were looking for this idea, you initially saw you were on a yacht party and you got bored.
Very bored.
And this actually was a culmination of the fact that can I do a business which doesn't get as boring as a yacht party?
I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't care about what's happening at the party.
Right.
I was like, I'm dyslexic. So I'm very visual. So I'm sitting in the back. It's like, I wish there's something like a slide to go from here on the water, be funny. And then like, I'm thinking like slide sideways and then the S shape. I'm just all in my head.
Right.
And then start talking to my suppliers like, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
And that was the first part of the business, like doing that.
Associating or connecting with an existing yacht.
Customizing slides for yachts. That
Very
was the
interesting.
Beginning.
Very interesting.
And then it's like, okay, let me do a pool in the back because you have jellyfish.
Yeah.
I did with a pool with a mesh under, subjected from the, so like we call them the sea pools.
Right.
So that was how we start making money in the beginning.
Why did you choose the floating park over the yacht?
Same thing. Because I'm on the beach, same thing, sitting down, and I hear this father saying, I wish there's something for my kids to do on the beach so I can have some quiet time.
Got it.
And I said, okay, let's research that. So again, what I did is nothing new. I just copy-paste and innovate.
Yeah.
And I made a brand.
Yeah.
And I made an emotion behind it. I made it more bigger and more...
Scale is bigger.
Not only scale, not only size, emotion, system... touch and feel, brand, social media.
Within the existing experience right now, because
yes.
people have to, let's say, buy a ticket and then take
yes.
an experience. I think the second thing that you mentioned was give them special experiences like maybe proposals or wedding.
Yeah.
What else do you think would you be able to add to this larger experience? Do you see...
It's a lot of things. Yeah, a lot of things. Yeah, yeah. Like birthday parties, corporate events, like I say, proposals. Just a good day out with you and your family.
Yeah.
You know, school trips. So all these things are all like different lines of money.
In terms of, let's say, the larger events business or experience business, Dubai actually shows the world what to do right now. There's a lot of things, installations, experiences, buildings, which are unbelievable. I mean, some years ago, that wouldn't even have been possible. It's possible. Where do you see, in your opinion and your vision, where do you see Dubai in terms of the next generation of entertainment or event experiences? Let's say 2030. Or 2035.
Yeah.
What do you think would be the kind of experiences which maybe my kids would probably have?
It's going to be crazy. Because again, I think there's four pillars. I remember two of them, sport and tourism is the biggest ones
yes.
for Dubai.
Correct.
Because again, Dubai, we have no petrol.
Yeah.
Our money comes from tourism and trading.
Right.
Export and re-importing. That's it. That's how we make money. You know our country from the airport.
Yes. Yes.
So when you enter the airport, you see the quality of the airport, the service. You can go from the door or plane to the door of Uber within 15, 20 minutes.
Correct.
That's unheard of. You know, the infrastructures, the hotels, the lifestyle, the whole thing, the whole 360. You know, because other countries are now, like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, they are throwing money at it.
Correct.
But they don't have what we have. It's the infrastructure and the people.
And the vision.
Yes, and the vision.
Absolutely.
Because you need the people to do it. Infrastructure, we have all that ready.
Correct.
We have the right people coming in and we have the right leaders leading us towards making this happen. Because making new laws that will make my project, his project work are pretty fast.
Absolutely.
Compared to anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
Because there's less, there is bureaucracy, but it's less than anywhere else.
Absolutely.
I think it's going to be just wilder and wilder.
Wilder and wilder.
Yeah, yeah.
And speaking of wilder, do you think electric and self-driving cars in itself? Because right now there's this whole news about Dubai testing self-driving cars on roads and it is actually very close to becoming reality. How do you see this business? What do you see as potential, number one? And how do you see that business getting implemented or getting incorporated in U-Rent as a larger business?
Cool. So honestly, I'm not a fan of EV cars. Let's just put it out there.
Me too.
I would never buy one.
Right.
I think it does more harm to the environment than actual the fossil fuel cars, but or it's called petrol. But for the most part, when it comes to self-driving cars, I've seen a couple actually already doing deliveries, food deliveries. But I've been on a pilot
stretch.
It's like on a pilot stage still. That's the beauty of U-Rent. An office called us around 4 months ago. It was some Qatari prince who opened a helicopter tour company. And he had around 5 helicopters just opened. And he was like, how can we collaborate? I was like, it's very simple. I would create a new category. You tell me how you run your business. What do you need displayed to the general public? And you tell me what you would like to change from a time to time basis, and I'll build it. True tech. Now, one of the key advantages that I have is the fact that studying software engineering, being a UI UX designer, my own developers cannot, excuse my language, bullshit me.
Yeah.
So if I were to ask them to develop something, I know the timeline. I know how long it's supposed to take. And I assist them and I work with them on getting it done. So it takes us 2 weeks to build a new category.
Right.
So for the self-driving taxis, for example, it would just be as simple as the RTA telling us or whoever's the company offering. I doubt it's going to be anyone but RTA for now offering that service.
Correct.
It would just tell us, okay, so the parameters as are such, the rates are such. We build the category and then we give them the credentials of their account, username, password. They are now able to log in, add more cars, remove cars, adjust prices, adjust locations. They are now in full control of their business. So we take their business online using U-Rent. Now, where I see it going in the long run, we are already seeing a massive amount of articles that are talking down on EV cars just purely because of Ford as an example. Ford just closed their production for EV cars and it's just they're losing a lot of money. There's not enough charging stations around. I feel like EVs will eventually become for those who are, you know, the elites in a sense where they have it, they use it, but they also use gasoline cars, but you know, they have that electric car.
It's an option.
Correct. Look at how long it took to get to the point where now we have enough gas stations, and even those on rush hours are packed just for refueling your car. And that's in 3, 4, 5 minutes, full tank, you're good to go. Who on earth is going to have the time to sit in a station for 2 hours to recharge their car? It's going to slow down business for Uber. It's going to slow down business for Kareem. It's going to slow down business for taxis because you're already seeing RTA Teslas.
Yeah.
So I think more or less it's a trend that people are following. Is it, in business language, is it sustainable and profitable? Unless you're in the charging station industry, I'll tell you, go for it. But if you're in the EV car industry,
it's not something that you see as
sustainable,
sort of becoming a mass movement.
Yeah, definitely not. In my opinion, I could be wrong, but that's my opinion.
In a larger sense, right, a lot of ideas when they start out look very different from when they actually become reality. And different moments, we start out with an assumption, but we pivot. We try to change things. We say, hey, I was trying to do A, but I think it'll actually become A2. If there's a moment, Ahmed, which you could talk about where you saw a certain direction and you thought, okay, maybe this is a far more realistic and probably a much more attractive business proposition. Mm. If there's any moment like that, which you can talk about where you realize that, hey, this is maybe something which may not be working, but I think I should go for this, which is a lot more lucrative and a bigger option in that sense.
All the time. Like I be doing something, I say, I think it's good, but actually bad. So I just, okay, let's cut losses. Come back. Many times that happens. And then sometimes, for example, we had a section in the business for rentals. We stopped it.
Right.
Because it was just a bad idea.
Right.
We thought it was going to be a good idea, but then while we're moving from a place to a place, breaking the assets, logistics, and pay insurance for the place, and patients are happy with the place, cancel the whole thing. So a lot of times, like, you know, you do things. For me, I don't call it losing. It's just more of learning. okay, we've learned many ways of why this will not work here and why this will work here. So now we know what works. In the beginning, I had 70 locations in Dubai.
Right.
Now I have only one. Sorry, 70 locations in the UAE.
Right.
Now I have only one.
Yeah.
Because that's the only one that actually makes money.
Yeah.
All the other ones, they just, okay, I'm there.
It's a part of the learning process.
Yeah, yeah, okay, I'm there, but then I'm not making money. This one is paying for all seven. It's
right.
Like, why? And then the quality control becomes less. The service is not there. People are stealing the money. It's like, you know what? Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to create one monster and make it really a big monster and make it the one, then do multiple ones that are small, small, small.
Absolutely. That becomes like your centerpiece.
Yeah. That's, that was the idea how it became the biggest one in the world.
It's actually become that, right? Like one of the most successful.
Because when I do like three locations, it's like, why I'm doing this myself? Pay three different rents and have the three different locations that I have to go in three different places, and then there's so many moving objects. Like, I have this location. Let's go bigger here.
It's working. Why not actually do
exactly,
more?
Yeah, yeah. That this one, we know it works.
Yeah.
Let's make it bigger.
Yeah, yeah. And I think speaking of that, I think at different points of time, you also look at people and you hire them for a reason. And when that doesn't work out, you need to also speak the truth and try to say, hey, I need to cut my losses. We need to fire.
Oh, yeah.
Is that been a conversation you've gone through? I'd love to hear that. I know we've spoken about it.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd love to hear it from you.
We had one location, it was a very, very big location. We had a lot of staff there. I've trained every single staff personally.
I hear that right? You said you have trained every single staff personally.
Personally.
Wow.
And I gave each one of them a manual personally.
Wow.
And then each one of those individuals has been warned three times.
Okay.
So one, two, three, one. It's like, guys, you're a customer. We do customers. You do better than this. You can't be sitting down on your phone or be eating in front of the customers. It doesn't look nice. And then one night, I was like, okay, guys, at the end of the day, team meeting, okay, you guys, I'm just mentioning names, okay, you stand here, you stand here, you guys see you tomorrow, you guys, you're fired. 74 people, out.
How did you feel?
It was hard, but then, but like, if I didn't do it, I would close the company.
Yeah.
Because that was a big, like 74 people, that's more than $250,000 dirhams.
Correct.
Salaries.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there's so much high operational costs and there's no revenue coming in.
Yeah.
If I continue doing this, I'm going to be in minus. Then I'm going to have to pay you guys afterwards. I'm going to be paying my kidney to pay you. So I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And again, it is where it is.
Yeah. I think there are two sides. An entrepreneur always lives with these two sides.
Yeah.
One is the side which has the right for the business. Yeah. The other one is the more human side.
The emotional aspect.
Emotional aspect. And I think the real success is determined when the entrepreneur chooses the right side of the business rather than the emotional side.
It's hard.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be done. It was hard, yeah. Because like, again, I'd be hemorrhaging money for no reason. Again, I wanted to eat at my table.
Yeah.
It's nothing personal. It's just
exactly.
Business. If I see a street, I'm going to say hi to you.
Exactly.
And that's it, yeah. And again, and one more thing, like, you know, with business, the team that you have that gets you up to a million is one team. The team that gets you to 10 million is another different team.
Right.
And a team for 100 million is a different team.
That's
so you
true.
Have to understand, like, okay, your capacity is amazing, but only till this part of the milestone.
That's very true.
And then you need to figure out, okay, I'm going to hire somebody more expensive and more professional and more better, and then get you that next milestone.
Next milestone.
I'm going to outgrow you.
Yeah.
So you either continue doing that part or try to come and learn and
evolve
with me.
Yeah.
You don't want to be having this thing we call founder syndrome. Yes, I'm the best who can do this. 100%. He's the best who can do everything. But then the issue is this. When it becomes micromanaging everybody and then slows you from growing.
Correct.
Because okay, I'd rather be, okay, here's a task that it takes me, let's say, 4 hours to do. Okay, you can take a day. You can take 2 days. But then, because that would empty that 40% time for me, you know, and I can focus on what I do much better. So again, sometimes, like, you know, you better have somebody else who can do a 50%, 60% job of what you can do, and then you can scale more.
Correct.
So that's the hardest thing, you know, letting go of your authority and power and being able to delegate.
Ego.
Yeah, and delegate.
Yeah.
Delegation is very hard.
Absolutely.
Especially in the beginning. Yeah.
It is. And I think sometimes what happens is the more you micromanage a person, you realize that that person is not right for you.
You cannot change people, man.
Yeah,
you cannot change people. Yeah,
at least at this stage.
It's very hard, yeah. Don't do it.
100%. I agree with everything he said. And it's I think one point that I encountered, maybe you encountered as well, is sometimes things just go wrong in the business. It's nothing to do with anything. You can't pinpoint why things are going wrong. But then you do your best, you maneuver, you battle each obstacle, and things only get worse.
That, my friend, is when the problem becomes the people with you in the company. There's something wrong inside that needs to be dealt with. And that was 99% of the time. Sometimes for me, it was resignations versus resignations from the tech department. See, the tech department, it's impossible to keep developers nowadays. Today, he works for you. Tomorrow, he has an offer from Emirates Airlines for double the salary. I was never one, and I learned this very early on. You want to go? Go. There's no way I'm going to keep you against your will. That's not healthy. That's toxic.
Correct.
And that will just create unwanted... it's a parasite.
It's a toxic culture.
It's a parasite in the workplace. Yeah. So anyone who resigns, please, by all means. But I can tell you, 99% of the people who resigned came back at some point and asked for their job again because it was... They saw what it was like and how I was with them.
Yeah.
And that's when you get your kind of like... I won't even call it a glorifying moment, but... That's when you know between you and yourself you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Is when people come back to you later and say, you are the best that's ever been as a leader in the business. Yeah. And I wish I can work with you again. Well, maybe one day.
Yeah.
But to me, I have people who were offered contracts and turned them down and chose to stay with me. Those are the guys who I give skin in the game. We call employee stocks, employee grants. They get skin in the game in the business. But I think for the most part, when it comes to employees in general, as what Ahmed said, it's hard to separate your emotional from what needs to be done. But you get to the point where you let that suffering happen inside, but you don't show it. You just keep moving. Just move on.
Absolutely. Moving on, in terms of manifestation, right? Entrepreneurs, we believe in the power of miracles. A lot of people, unpopular opinion, a lot of people would say this on camera, saying that a lot of things that I've done as an entrepreneur, some things I'll attribute to me and some things I won't attribute to me. Probably a majority of them I won't attribute to me. How important is miracles in your life? How important is manifestation? Do you actually follow a process towards envisioning how things should be? And have they turned out to
you? I go or you go?
Go for it.
Okay.
Let's catch it up.
To me, I've lived through it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a quick example. I founded the company in 2017. I partnered with X person. That X person took all the money.
Yeah.
So I lost over $1 million in a span of 9 months. I had to pick up the pieces and continue from zero developing the product. Obviously, there was legal
back and forth
for a whole 8 months after that, while building my business, while approaching the RTA for a license. When I finally got the license, which was in 2020, March.
Right.
Do you remember when that was?
That was the pandemic.
That was when a month before they...
closed everything.
So I'm coming to get my license to operate after 2 years of misery. Sorry, until further notice.
There's an anticlimax happening.
Yeah, no, well, they told me we cannot issue the license until we see what's going to happen with this lockdown. So I waited up until December of 2020. I kid you not, I had 1.5 million in debt. And I'm not ashamed to say that. I think the whole world needs to know what real entrepreneurship
is. Absolutely.
1.5 million in debt. Legal fees that I had to still pay, obviously fighting what was owed to me. Approaching the RTA, continuously saying, tell me when you're going to give it to me. We don't know. Okay. Keeping the few investors that were with me, you know, on a positive note, obviously, because I'm the type of person, when I have investors with me, that's on my neck. That's like, that's my responsibility.
Absolutely.
You know, that's something that I cannot lose.
Correct.
But I was at a point where even they, I kid you not, they're still with me today. And they would tell you the same story. They came to me after seeing the misery I've been through. And they told me, Omar, if we lose all our money, it's fine. We've seen you struggle. And I gave them a look as if they insulted me. It's like, bro, if you think I'm doing this for you, you're in a different spectrum. I'm doing this for me, but you guys... believed in me. So if I flop, forget how you guys see me, it's how I see myself.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I kept pushing. December comes around, RTA calls me, boom.
we can give you the license. I was 1.5 million in debt, no money to my name. 3 months overdue on my car loan payments. Mm. They wanted to repossess my car. I obviously, that was my only method of transportation. And I started from a point where there's no family help. It was just me. And my family thought I was crazy to take it this far. Let's just put it this way, you know. January comes around, similar to his story of knocking on doors. I was trying to raise money to launch my business for over a year with no luck. Purely because all the investors would say, oh, well, it's not a safe space. Mobility is a very, you know, it's a COVID heavy business. And like there's lockdowns and social distancing
right now.
So, yeah, it's out of fashion. I will never forget. I had a friend who is a well-known car rental company in Dubai who believed in me, gave me 70 cars from his company. He was the only host on board. I sat with him for a coffee and I was just telling him, I don't know what to do. I don't know. And it was after New Year's. I had the license. I was okay to launch. I launched my business, brother, with one full stack developer that was with me that I couldn't afford to keep for another month and I had to leave to Pakistan. That's where he was from. His whole family's visas were expired, so there was no choice. He had to leave. I launched my business with 70 cars on board just to tell myself I launched it.
Right.
With all these problems. Within 10 days of launching my business, I'm telling you 10 days, I already had 7 bookings on the platform from these 70 cars. And the first booking I got, I had to pull over on Al Khail. I got an anxiety attack. I started shaking and I didn't know how to process it. I was like, this is real. This is the first day in 3 years that my business has completed a transaction.
Right.
7 days after that incident, I had a phone ring from a friend who said, are you still looking for investment? And at that point, I was like, man, I'm so drained. I'm so burnt out. I just want to tell him no.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, sure, man. Who do you have? He's like, I know someone who's actively investing. Funny enough, I meet with that person, Hilton JBR. That's where I sat with him. He's with me today as well. Within 2 hours of meeting him, he did not flinch. He did not even like nod, smile, nothing. So I thought I was like, bro, I don't know what to, like I walked out. I had a CFO who's also an investor in the company, Greg, my partner. We walked out of the meeting, we looked at each other and he was Russian. So like Russians have that, you know, nonchalant expression, you know what I mean? Especially the big businessman. Yeah. So we walked with each other. We have no idea if this guy's even interested.
Right.
3 days after meeting him, I had $1 million in my account.
Wow.
He called me up. He's like, I believe in you. I see something in you. We're not going to worry about the paperwork.
Right.
Here's the money. He wired the money. He's like, go continue building.
Yeah.
We'll worry about the paperwork later. That, my friend.
Yeah.
Within 10 days, my whole life changed.
And sometimes the best support comes from unexpected quarters, right? Like it always comes from
That's what eventually becomes a chase.
Yeah.
See, I think you would agree. It's, you start, when people tell you, man, what are you going to do? I was like, bro, it's going to happen. I don't know how. I don't know when. But I'm maybe tomorrow going to the mall, I'm going to bump into someone. That's what I started believing in.
Right.
These opportunities that it's all divinely planned. It's orchestrated.
Absolutely.
And it's just life testing you. How bad do you want it?
Correct.
That's it.
Absolutely. And I think from a point of, let's say from our business, some of the best clients that we've worked with are clients who I probably meet them once in a year. Right. And then the ones that we really are constantly up and meeting and extremely close with their families, unfortunately, those are not the clients who really are the ones who contribute to your business. It's a paradox, isn't it? What do you think, Amber?
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
From a point of manifestation, I have heard of this fact that there's this one glorious month in your recent life where you've been celebrated from Guinness Book of World Records, from different award ceremonies, and being rightfully so one of the business personalities who's created their mark. How did that 1 month happen?
Happened after 10 years. 10 years of work. There was a phase I did 57 months of nothing a day off.
57 months of? Months. Oh my God.
So no days off. Like every day I was doing 9 to 20 hours every day.
That's 5 years.
Yeah. 5 years. Nothing
that's,
a day off.
That's brutal.
Yeah, yeah. I was fighting to go back to zero.
Yeah.
The same thing. I had a partner who came in with me in the beginning. Some of the wrong contracts. left me with 4 cases and $2 million, $2 million in debt. Fight that and try to make money and pay debts, renegotiate everybody over and over again, renegotiate over and over again, stress, trying to open new locations and okay, how you pay for that? Open locations, open a location with no money. Like I actually convinced the supplier to give me that on payment terms, launch the location after 2 months, realized the people I was renting from, the developer, big name, he didn't even own the land. It was owned by the government. So now the government saying, hey, what are you doing with my land? It's like, I have a contract. It is our land.
Yes.
So now the developer takes my checks and sues me for my checks, for the rent, for the location he doesn't even own. And then the government takes my assets away till you sort out the permissions. Amazing. And then you have, so all these things happen at the same time. So 3-4 months of just like every single day, either you're in police station, court, lawyers, municipality, or in bed dying. Basically, trying to cash flow, you know how it is. Stress. And then like eventually, okay, it's going to work out. Then okay, we get the contract. Now I want to go back to my location. They told me you can't access our land. You want to come to the water, to the beach, come from the air, or come from the sea. Literally, that's what he told me. I was like, okay. So I parked in Barasti, the Mayasiyahi there, with my games who were all taken away in Elgo Sayers, with a small generator, and like over the night, 101 times with a jet ski, tow it from that place to there. And then for 13 days, fixing 3,200 holes. And then pull it up there. And then that month, or 40 days, we made all the money that I needed to cover all my debts in that month.
Wow.
Yeah.
But then continue from there, you know? I'm still till now.
It never stops.
But then, and that's when I got the Guinness World Record.
Right.
After those fights. So sorry for that. So like, I was a ghost, so I didn't have social media. I wasn't public anywhere. Nothing. Quiet. Just doing my thing. And I was like, you know what? I had a situation. I was either I'm going to get bankrupt or I'm going to go 5 times bigger. I was more toward getting bankrupt.
Right.
I was like, okay. And it's like, it comes back from the first thing. What is the relationship that you have with yourself? Are you your best friend or are you your critic?
Right.
You can't
Very
be both.
True.
You can't be both.
Very true.
You can, either this or this.
Yeah.
I'm a best friend. You know, I'm a big believer in myself. I have a single doubt on myself. I never doubt myself or God and anything. It's not in my head. Okay, let's take this horrifying situation. How are we going to go back? Take a convert to positive and times three.
Yeah.
And then within 2 hours in my head, I came up with the idea of let's make this biggest one. And then, okay. And then I was talking to my friend. He saw me actually last month. He's like, Ahmed, I was with him. And I was telling him, okay, I'm going to make the biggest one. I'm going to go on social media. I'm going to become viral. I'm going to get these awards. I'm going to have interviews with these big people. He looked at me. Yeah, sure. And it's like, I can see. He didn't believe what I was saying. Because everything I was saying was ridiculous.
Right.
It was ridiculous things I'm saying. But that's how you manifest things. You only see them happening. You do not see why will it happen. You let go of the fears to let in what you want.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And then within that month, I got the Guinness World Record, then Entrepreneur of the Year, and Emirate Business of the Year, and CEO of the Year.
All in the same month.
In the same month. Next month, I started doing podcasts, and I went viral. First time, and the second time, and the third time, and then my page grew to where it is now.
Which we all know about.
Yeah.
As they say, rest is history.
100%.
No, it's not history. We're just stretching now. No, I'm serious. We're just stretching.
Yeah.
I'm going to warm up soon now.
Yeah.
There's more to do.
It's amazing how adversity, in your case, has actually created a business model, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you found a place where you were going through disputes on rent. You said, listen, which is the place in this planet where there is no rent and that's water?
Now they want to charge me rent for that water now.
Right.
They're telling me, like, no, we think that we should pay this much money. It's like, on which basis?
Right.
This is what the community said. Like, but okay, give me the base.
What you just said right now goes hand in hand with a saying that I believe in. It says, like, new levels, new demons.
Right.
Yeah.
You get problems, you're doing something right.
Right.
Yeah. You don't get problems, you're not doing anything.
Yeah. Correct.
Honestly. And
you have to ruffle feathers.
Oh, 100%. Back to what he was saying. Back in the day, my younger years, when I was still a teenager, and I used to see these people who were like, oh, I'm going to be this, I want to be that. And I used to see them, I'm like, oh, this guy's delusional, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Then when I started pursuing entrepreneurship, every time I heard someone speak of things that are just a dreamer, in a sense, I'm going to be this and I'm going to do that, I'll be the first to tell everyone he will be that.
Right.
because of the way he's saying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because look, there's nothing easier than giving up. I'll tell you that.
Correct.
There's nothing easier than giving up, and it's the easy way out.
Absolutely.
You know, we just go, you know, in your own cocoon, you disappear, which is a lot of these gurus that make a lot of money and disappear, you know, because it's not, there's no solid foundation, you know. Yeah. And here's the thing, when you set out that intention to the world saying, I'm going to become this person. So that's hurt. That prayer is hurt. And it just becomes a process of throwing things at you to mold you into the person you need to be to acquire that.
Right.
You know what I mean? So whenever things aren't happening in my life, it only means that I'm still in the oven. I'm being cooked.
Right.
You know what I mean? By forces that I cannot see. Because so many times there is delays and becomes so frustrating. Like my whole life's been delays with, especially with contracts now that I'm working with on a government scale and so on and so forth. It becomes a point where it no longer becomes frustrating. You start understanding, okay, it's just not my time yet.
Right.
There's something I'm going to have to learn. 2 months pass. You go like, okay. So this happened. I learned this. This is no longer there. Now it makes sense. So it really becomes a game. It becomes, you're just waiting for things to happen so that that puzzle becomes clearer.
Right.
And I think you would agree with me, but it gets to the point where even when problems start happening, you go like, that's reassurance that I'm on the right path.
Just zoom out.
Right. Oh,
yeah. You have to.
Yeah, always, like, don't be emotionally charged. Look at the macro.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You can't be impulsive, like with reactions. Oh man, I was the worst. When it comes to becoming impulsive with decisions, I lost a lot of money doing that. I lost a lot of opportunities doing that. And I learned the most difficult kind of game in the world of entrepreneurship is being calm and contained.
Mm.
And, for example, when something great happened, let's say 2 weeks ago, and it was after a very tough journey of, you know, molding, I would call it, some molding process of myself. Instead of being excited, I was scared. You know what I mean? It wasn't that excitement that was supposed to be there became anxiety.
Right.
And that anxiety translates to what? Shedding.
Yeah.
I'm now being exposed to what's coming. And between you and yourself, you go like, okay, I've worked so hard and I've waited so long for this. I can't mess it up.
Mm.
So all the mistakes that I've done in the past are supposed to be now non-existent.
Yeah.
So I think that and being aligned with that and knowing exactly what's happening and aware of everything that's happening
is the real sort of...
the real but hardest thing to kind of master.
Yeah. What would be your earliest memories when you decided to be an entrepreneur?
Let me decide. It just happened.
Never ever? Early in your life, you never thought of being one?
I know, I was always very competitive.
Right.
Let's start from there. I was thrown into the situation. I had to recreate myself. Because I always had like a big managerial corporate job. And then like one day they said, hey, you've been redundant.
Right.
You're 6 months salary leave. It's okay, fine. You find a new job.
Never thought of going back again to a corporate.
I did 73 interviews. Nobody wanted to hire me. And it's like, no, you. And then I had an accident, and then like I couldn't walk for 40 days. I was in bed, slept desk. So I had to face every saving demon in my head. So okay, now what? Am I going to cry about this? So, yeah. Or are we going to recreate myself?
Are you going to be your best friend?
Yeah. Recreate myself.
Yeah.
And that's when Aquafun idea came up.
Yeah.
And that the first year, no money. Zero. Then the last day of the first year.
Yeah.
Then next year, we got investors, made all the money. And then like 6 months later, lost all the money.
Yeah.
And then next 3 years, just fighting back to get back to zero.
Yeah.
Which you fighting back to go to zero.
Absolutely.
And I want to go to zero again. Zero is nice. So yeah. But now like, you know, like I know same for him. Like we can go broke today.
Wouldn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't break you.
Yeah, yeah. 6 months later, I'll be millionaire again.
Yeah.
Because now we know.
Yeah.
Now I know the formula. It's me.
What would you say your reckless 20-year-old back of the mistakes that happened then versus now?
Look, the difference I think between me and Ahmed is the fact that I did things that no one bright or in the right mind
you'd be surprised
would have done.
You'd be surprised, bro.
Yeah, no. Yeah,
I just don't talk about them. That's all.
No, but in a sense where I have to admit, being in corporate teaches you fundamentals.
No.
Listen, fundamental. I know what you
go
mean.
Go there, I come back to you.
It teaches you fundamentals of how to deal with people.
How to conduct yourself in a professional space.
I never spent a day in corporate. And how my entrepreneur world started, actually, it roots back to my childhood.
Right.
So I was a troublemaker as a kid. My father gave me the best education, the best life I could ask for. He's like, anything beyond education, you need to earn.
Right.
You know, my sisters, you know, they had everything they wanted. And I'm a single boy in a family, so I don't have brothers. So I think it's the way my father raised me. And my father told me, you want something, get good grades. And I was barely passing. I went to Shwefat. From fifth grade up until 10th grade, I was barely passing. And then the pivotal moment was in 10th grade. I'll never forget. I was 15 years old, 14, 15. And I was fed up because it was when the PS3 came out, I think, and all my friends had it and they already had games and they were, and I was still saving money to buy that PS3 because my father was like, you're getting 56, 57 and your friends are getting 90s and 80s. You don't deserve a PS3. I was like, okay, you know what? Cool.
Let me do what I can.
Omar, find a way to make money. And it started off with a puppy. I got a puppy as a gift. I walked him one day. I walked him on the street. Someone stopped by and said, oh, that's a beautiful puppy. Where do you buy it from? I looked at him and I looked at the puppy. I was like, it's for sale. He was like, how much? I was like, 7,000. It was a German Shepherd. I just threw a number. I don't even know. Like, don't ask me how, but the guy ended up taking the puppy. I went back home without a puppy and I put 5,000 in my pocket. I was 5,000. I was 15. I was like, man, I'm a millionaire. You know what I mean? The first time I had that much money in my pocket. So I went home. My father came back. And obviously, my father came back. We had a very rough kind of relationship just purely because of the disappointments that I kept pushing his way. I mean, he kept trying to... He didn't leave a stone unturned to try to put me on the right path. You know? But I had the wrong friends, wrong influence, you name it.
Right.
So I took that 5,000. It was like my fifth one. I was like, man, that was that easy? Rang a bell. Was BBM days, BlackBerry.
Right.
You'd be surprised that by the time I graduated high school, I'd made 700,000 dirhams.
Nice.
And my mom went crazy because she thought I was earning it in a non-legitimate way. And I was just like, what are you doing? And I was very transparent. And it got to the point where my father became my business partner. He asked me how.
Really?
We had a storage unit outside the house that was supposed to be a room.
Right.
But we utilized it as storage. I grew the operation to where I was keeping 30 puppies at a time, 40 puppies at a time. And I learned the ethics of business there because I was scammed many times. I was given litter of puppies who were sick, who kept dying. So I learned all the nits and grits of business in that business and basically ended up renting out that room from my father and I paid him 5,000 a month for it. You know what I mean? And I really was running something and I kept doing it when I went to Canada after graduating. But then that then turned to motorcycle business. So I started buying and selling motorcycles.
Right.
So I already had that entrepreneurial mind because of not having anything that I wanted given to me. So I started working for it. So that's where really it clicked for me.
The need of actually things.
The need, and I think it's the me craving independence.
Got it.
I craved independence because I obviously, you know, I was surrounded by a lot of kids who were just spoiled. And if there's one thing I want to thank my father for today, it's the fact that he didn't spoil me.
Yeah.
Where he could have.
Yeah.
He never gave me anything.
Yeah.
Because he knew that this would trigger something in me to where now I've become self-sustainable. But at the same time, the whole conversation with me and my, like, we're best friends now.
Right.
There's no father-son relationship. We're just best friends, you know.
Mm.
And that...
changed into what?
Changed the whole dynamic. Right. Yes.
I want to have one single unpopular advice from an entrepreneur to another. I don't want the, when I say unpopular, I do not want the regular, hey, work hard and play, because those are things which I think are fairly vanilla, right? So first with you, Ahmed, give us one unpopular advice which you would perhaps give to another aspiring entrepreneur like you, a gutsy entrepreneur like you.
I don't think it's for everybody.
Right.
It's not. It's just a sexy word, but from everywhere, I'm an entrepreneur. It's like, no, you're not. You're self-employed.
Right.
You're a technician.
Right.
You're not.
Absolutely.
That's the other thing. People, like, do you really want to be an entrepreneur? Because again, are you going to do the hours? Lonely, testing, emotionally tested all the time, physically tested all the time. Because like, it's not for everybody. So you have to understand your motive. Is it only just money? Because you will lose very fast. Very fast. Just money for you. It's not going to work out.
What is at the end of the tunnel?
What tunnel? There's a tunnel.
It's a journey.
Yeah. It's not the journey. It's the company. And the most important company is you and yourself. So you need to have that beautiful company, you and yourself. The first relationship, you and yourself, how are you? Can you be alone? Because you're going to be alone a lot. You know, are you ready to say no to go out and do these things or not? Because I said no to everything. Yeah, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't party. I don't hang out with anybody. My rules is like, do you make me happier, healthier, wealthier? Yes? Come over. No? Stay home. So you have to be very, very conscious about your set and setting, your mindset and your setting.
Does being an entrepreneur make you more conscious of yourself?
Every single step. Your thoughts, your emotions, your vibration, your everything. Very conscious. So you have to have control about these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because being impulsive, I was the same thing when I was younger. And I mean, I was these things before, but you learn, okay. So now when things throw at me, it's like, breathe.
10-second rule.
Yeah, practice breathing.
Yeah, breathe. Take some water. You know, analyze this with data. Understand the data and the emotion, the data. Remove yourself, the emotional part. What's the data behind this? Learn from that part and then react to it.
Absolutely.
You know?
What about you, Amar? What do you think is that one unpopular advice that you have for fellow entrepreneurs?
Well, I'll give you two instead of one. Number one is aligned with what he just said, but I think if anyone wants to pursue entrepreneurship, they need to master self-love. And by self-love, I mean you need to focus all the energy on you, because if you are going to be looking at anything outside of yourself, you will stand no chance being an entrepreneur. Absolutely. Because everyone was going to, you need to be prepared for being shot down every day by many. And if you're going to get hurt and, you know, have these little emotions triggered, you might as well just, you know,
stay home,
go work for a company and, you know, let someone pamper you and do that stuff. It's a very lonely road. There's a lot of sacrifice. But another thing that I would even say before this is setting your intention between you and yourself. If I'm going to set an intention of starting an entrepreneurial journey to become rich, I'll never be rich, ever. You know what I mean? If I'm going to set an intention of creating something to have a positive impact on myself and the world, especially in his case, also in my case, we're serving people.
Mm.
We're serving the general public. You know what I mean? We're in the business of what I like to call delivering experiences. And when you start revolving your whole business around the satisfaction of others, there's no way you won't succeed. And that's where it roots back to intention, because if your intention is money, you'll get burnt out for 6 months and you're not going to see money, man. This 6-7 years, you will not see money.
Yeah.
There's nothing lavish about becoming the first 6-7 years. Till that pivotal moment happens, and by the time you get there, you'll be in a point where you don't want anyone to know you have money, because you've seen enough.
Yeah,
you've seen enough of, as in people and their intentions and what they want. So you just want peace, you want family, your closest brothers around you enjoying that with you. You know what I mean? So setting your intention. So if you sit between myself, I want to start this business to be remembered as the person who created this that's going to revolutionize whatever XYZ, you will make it. If you set an intention, I just want to be, so I can buy a Bugatti and I buy a Bugani and buy a Ferrari and I want to be rich, and it's all selfish, you will not get there.
Fair enough. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have all you guys here, and I know that we're all headed for a nice dinner. So take care, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
And just like that, we finished our first episode. And I am so delighted to see that more and more entrepreneurs are going to come here, talk about all the raw and uncut stories, which makes their eventual journey so memorable. I'm going to do this 2 times in a month so that you guys can know the real, raw, uncut stories of how entrepreneurs are building their businesses. And these businesses are disrupting and are completely tearing down business models which have existed for eternity. So for more brutal, real, unpopular truths of watching entrepreneurs tell us their journey, keep watching.